Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm Eric Quanstrom, CMO at Cyence.
And I'm Caroline Maloney. I'm the Director of Sales Training and Enablement here at Cyence.
So today we have Jed Marley. And I keep thinking of Bob Marley. I'm almost thinking of, don't worry about a thing. Not spelled the same, but you know, at least now you'll never forget that name as long as you live. At any rate, Jed was a great, great guest, especially when it comes to tactical insights.
Absolutely. This episode, it should be required listening, Eric. Do you think so for anyone stepping into an SDR leadership position?
I really do, because Jed was the youngest SDR ever hired by PandaDoc and has literally worked his way up to now being the global manager of outbound sales development at PandaDoc. So a couple of rungs that he's jumped up, and it's obvious why when you listen to this interview.
Yeah, he has incredible tangible tactics that make metrics make sense. You know, to put it simply, sales leaders listening to this, he delivers such valuable insights on which metrics to focus on to make sense for your team. And it's really just an incredible episode, chock full of knowledge.
Chock full. My favorites were a lot of the insights gleaned on what he found by going into his inbound that then influenced outbound at Panda. I mean, these are the kinds of things that you're going to take away from and bring right back into your team wherever you're listening.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, I think we should dive right in. I'm super curious. I really admire your background and how you have carved your own path. I'm curious, you have so many like entrepreneurial initiatives at such a young age, which is awesome. And I'm curious where that stems from.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was just my upbringing with my parents. You know, like it probably started with the fact that they were like, you're going to pay for college. If you're going to college, you're going to pay for your first car. So that was just kind of I was fortunate enough to be raised that way. I was also homeschooled growing up. So, you know, my parents gave me the choice, did I want to go to school or did I want to be homeschooled? And my homeschooling was very like self-directed, self-taught. And so a lot of that responsibility fell on me growing up. So I think that's initially where it came from. And it just kind of naturally developed into starting a career in sales.
That's awesome. And I see on your profile, you have listed as the youngest hire ever at PandaDoc. Am I right there? Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Can you speak to some of your experience getting started with PandaDoc? How you got involved there?
Yeah. Well, it's funny so I was 17 when I started at PandaDoc, and I don't think anybody knew my age at the time. And I had moved from Michigan down to Florida, and there's a lot of funny stories with that. So first of all, I couldn't sign a lease on an apartment. And so I had a roommate that thank God was old enough to sign a lease. And then I remember our first day in the office, it was me and my roommate who both started at PandaDoc, and they're going around the room saying like, just introduce yourself. And after like, how old are you guys? And I don't even, HR wise, I don't even know if you can ask it anyways, but I said my age and everyone was like, what the hell? So it was funny. It was a funny experience when I started, but the way I found PandaDoc was, so I was homeschooled after, you know, graduating high school. I kind of had two options. I was trying to play college basketball. Unfortunately, I'm not athletic enough. I'm a shooter, but I couldn't really do anything but maybe ride the bench. And I didn't know what I wanted to go to college for. So I found this program called Praxis, and it's a 6-month professional development bootcamp where you just learn basic skills like just communication, email writing, things that are basic that translate to any sort of career path you want to go down, not necessarily just sales. And at the end of the bootcamp, they help connect you with growing startups and they help you pitch. So I was sending like pitch videos to different companies to get jobs. I interviewed for like 10 different companies over 2 months. I got rejected by all of them, and PandaDoc took a chance on me. And that's what had me move from Detroit, Michigan, which is where I'm at now. And from, I packed all my stuff up. I moved down to PandaDoc and I started there. So that's kind of how I found the company.
I'm really curious, you know, especially given your upward trajectory with Panda, but knowing that so many SDRs start their career kind of first job, well, in your case, out of high school, but in others, immediately out of college. What do you think is so important or most important to know? And even what do you look for in the SDRs that you hire at Panda as far as skill set, mindset, traits?
I think just the number one thing that I always look for when hiring, and I think the thing that helped me is, are they hungry and do you know what motivates them? And I know it's kind of like a common answer, but it's like, it's really easy to see, like, you're interviewing SDRs and you can see the person that looks like they have it all figured out. They have the experience. But if you can't identify during the interview process, what are they motivated by? What's that next step? And how can I motivate this person? Then I try to stay away from that. I'd rather have somebody who's really hungry and really motivated, because if I believe in myself as a leader and the process that I've built out, I know I can train them in the right way. And so I think that was an advantage that I have, is that I felt like I had something to prove. I kind of felt hungry. And I would, you know, there's basic things like a competitive sports background. That's obviously really common. But I think the biggest thing is, if you're like out of high school, out of college, and you're trying to get an SDR job, have like really punchy stories about your upbringing that you can speak to, that talks about your motivation or how hungry you are. So whether that's like speaking to like your work ethic, but have like a crispy story that you can just reference in your interviews that really proves, because you don't have that experience. So you have, and that's what I did as well. And I had like things that I referenced from basketball, but you have to have something that's kind of crispy, you know, but it's like, it really points to the fact that you're a hungry, motivated person.
Yeah. And speaking of that hiring process, you know, those are some great tips. And I'm curious, do you think that budding SDRs should be digging into their potential future sales tools like HubSpot, Salesforce, et cetera? Do you think that that's valuable prior to interviewing at companies for anyone listening who might be, you know, going through this process?
I think so. That was something that I did as well, is you can look, if you're trying to apply for a job, look at the tools that they require you to know, like should have Salesforce knowledge, HubSpot, whatever. And then just go start a free trial, sign up for a monthly account, and then record quick Loom videos that you can send to them via email that say, hey, this proves that I know how to do, like a quick 30-second video of you creating an opportunity in Salesforce, and then send that. I think that was a thing that I did during the interview process. That program Praxis taught me to do that. But it's like, you can teach yourself most of those things, and then just showing that you can do that is goes a long way.
For what it's worth, having hired hundreds of folks myself, like, nobody does that. Like, literally, yeah. Nobody comes with proof points at the ready. And so if you want to immediately stand out from the crowd, that is the surest fire way to do so. So walk us through some of kind of the key development points in a young SDR's life. Maybe you can even draft off of your own kind of progression path.
When I first started, I didn't even know what the role of an SDR really was. Like, why am I booking these meetings? And then I started to realize, okay, we're trying to set up deals and actually like revenue. And it's just funny that I didn't know those things. But, you know, I think when you're first starting, at least for me, the way that my development went was, I came in really hungry and I said, I'm going to out dial everybody else in the room. And so that was my thing. But I, my messaging was not on point. Like, nothing else is on point other than the fact that I was dialing the phone more than anybody else and just trying to like catch up with their skill level by putting in more activity. So I think when in terms of like an SDR's development and my own, I think those first 3 months in your first SDR role should really be about putting in the activity as much as possible, so you can kind of learn the things you don't know because of that lack of experience. And then from that like 3 to 6 month mark, what I realized was that I was only getting so far by putting in an insane amount of activity. And I had to kind of learn to be more intentional, like slow down and say, okay, how can I improve my messaging? Maybe I should get better at email. And that 3 to 6 month mark was really where I got intentional. I started looking for outside resources, you know, books, podcasts, LinkedIn stuff, and then applying that stuff. And from that point, that's kind of where a lot of things started to take off for me.
Yeah. And when you slow down and get more intentional too, you know, as an SDR, you find that you have a lot of opportunities in the low hanging fruit, right? Like, you find that when you slow down and reshuffle and get organized. So how do you help your team get organized and slow down and do what you did?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of things that I could probably point to. I think one of the big ones I'll start with is like finding patterns, I guess, within what you're doing. So after you've had like 3 months and you've started to book meetings, look back at all the opportunities you booked and try to find patterns. Like, what were the main titles that you were calling on? Like, who are you having like more success with? Are you having more success with a VP of sales versus somebody in marketing? I'm speaking from my perspective, where we can call on a lot of different personas, but then double down on the people you're having success with. Or we also can sell to a lot of different verticals. Like, look for patterns like that. I'll give you an example. Like, one thing I noticed is I did this from looking into inbound data. So I would look at the inbound data that was coming in and try to see like, how can I reverse that and go outbound and use that data to go outbound. And one of the things I noticed was there was a lot of like people in their first, 3 to 9 months in the role. Directors of sales operations was a big thing. Like, they join a company in their first 3 to 9 months and they're coming inbound looking for demo requests. So I reversed that search and went outbound looking for those types of people. So it's like finding those little trigger points and trying to be a little bit more intentional about it.
That's something that you now broadcast kind of like to your team and make sure that they realize that insight? Or are you trying to orchestrate kind of like the aha moments for your own SDRs in the same way?
Yeah, I probably need to do a better job of orchestrating the aha moments, because then I think you retain it better and you're more bought in, instead of saying, yo, I already figured it out, this is what you got to do. They're not as bought in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to kind of help them understand that. And so I guess to answer your question, it's a little bit of both, but I could probably be better at orchestrating those, like you said, aha moments.
Not meant as a criticism or kind of a management assessment, more along the lines of, an SDR, as you indicated, always is going to go through some sort of journey. And then, I imagine managing as many of them as you do at Pandadoc, there's just individual challenges all the way through the value chain of where you need to skills level up, where those insights might be, and they're different for each and every one of your SDRs, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And you kind of have to meet them where they're at. Yeah, it's a good call out. And it's like some people come in and they have better phone skills, like natural phone skills. And so it's like stepping back and realizing you need to focus on the email copywriting, that sort of thing. So yeah, definitely something I noticed.
Yeah. And on the subject of leadership and direct coaching and leadership, I noticed that you also manage a team of leaders in addition to SDRs. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Cool. So how do you lead leaders?
Good question. I'm still kind of learning that motion right now. I think one of the biggest things that's helped me is just putting your trust in them, that like, hey, that's your team. And like, you, like letting them feel like they have full control of their team and I'm just there to support them. If we promoted them into a team lead position, then in theory, we should trust them in their direction of the company. I'm just there to help with coaching for them. So kind of the way I like to do it is just like step back and let them kind of come up with the ideas and the things they want to do and coach their team in their way. And I'll help them kind of steer the ship, but like stepping out of team meetings, letting them run those team meetings themselves, letting them kind of come up with some of the strategy. Cause if you're kind of hovering over first of all, I don't have enough time to be able to do that. Like that was a big thing I had to learn. And so, yeah, I think the biggest thing is giving up some of that control, letting go of some of your ego too, because I was just managing those people that I now passed off to my team leads. And they instantly come in with new ideas that are better than what I had before. And so I think that's a big thing that, at least for me and probably other people who start to manage leaders for the first time, is that you kind of have to let go of your ego in a sense and understand that like they're going to have some better ideas than you. Let them keep that spotlight. And that's a good thing because it only supports you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it also allows that professional development to occur in kind of a somewhat of a natural state, I suppose, or on its own rhythm going forward. I'm curious what some of those insights that you've seen develop in using that process.
Yeah, one of the first things, so we just promoted Stephen Chase, shout out to him. He's our new enterprise team lead. And one of the first things he did was our percentage of meetings that were booked that were converted to qualified opportunities was kind of lower than we'd like it to be in the enterprise segment. And one of the first things he did was kind of draft an SLA between the enterprise AEs and the enterprise SDRs, where anytime an enterprise SDR would book a meeting for that account executive, they would schedule like a 10-minute debrief with the AE to go over the opportunity notes, give them all the information they have, and kind of be more connected to the opportunity with the account executive. So it holds the AE accountable to working with that SDR, like reviewing the notes in an actual Zoom call, as opposed to just throwing the notes in Salesforce and then passing the app off. And it also helps the SDRs feel like they're developing their career because they're learning from the AEs a lot more closely. And we just implemented it. It was completely his idea, not something I'd thought of before. And I mean, we'll see. I mean, the goal is hopefully that those conversion rates from meetings booked to meetings qualified will go up. But that's a really good example of something that was immediately implemented from that.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of like relationships between SDRs and AEs, what are some successful things that you've seen that have made those two teams communicative, bonded, working really well together in your experience?
Yeah, there needs to be at least weekly meetings between the SDRs and AEs, in my opinion. Like the way we have it set up is we have what we call win teams, where it's an account executive, it's an SDR, and they also have what we call MDRs, which are just people who are mining data, so finding phone numbers, emails, and they have win team pod meetings at least once a week. And that's the big thing, just like reviewing. The SDR has a lot to learn from the AEs because they're doing a lot more discovery beyond that first meeting, and they need to be communicating that back to the SDR so they can improve their messaging. All the discovery and extra pain that they're pulling out throughout the sales cycle is really valuable information for the SDR to have so that they can go update, you know, improve their email and their phone call messaging going forward. So those weekly meetings, at least, I mean, some of them meet like almost every day. I think that's one of the biggest things if you're not already doing that.
And do you have a system in place where your SDRs, you know, it sounds like they're working with the MDRs to kind of isolate down on the lead list and who we're targeting or who you're targeting. But it sounds also like the SDRs have kind of free rein for messaging and what they're using as far as scripting. Give us a window into that world.
Yeah, so when we bring on a new SDR, the first 3 months, we have a process in place. So we have a recommended script, we have recommended cadences and messaging. And my VP of sales development calls it earned freedom, I guess. And so what that means is like in those first 3 months, you're gonna follow our process because we've seen it work. And then through kind of doing ramp successfully and following our process, you earn that freedom to then just go out on your own and be creative. So try new, you know, and that's important to actually develop the strategy going forward. So the SDRs do have control over what their script is like. You know, we do have standardized cadences or sequences, if you call it that, with standardized messaging, but they're allowed to personalize things, come up with new ideas, and we encourage that. But again, in those first 3 months, it's about mastering the process we already have in place. Once you've proven that, we encourage people to be creative and kind of come up with new ideas.
And so how do you kind of like hand off that modification baton, or how do you, I don't want to use the word police that, because that wouldn't be probably a fair characterization, but like, how do you earn it? Like, and when is that decided on and like approved, so to speak?
Yeah, so it's not necessarily black and white as it stands right now, but it's usually like right out of ramp. Like you've hit your ramp targets.
Okay.
And then we're having conversations around like, well, how do you think, you know, you can improve, you know, this cadence. So it's usually right out of ramp, right? Like, have you successfully completed ramp? And if not, like you haven't necessarily proven that you've mastered the process we already have in place, but it's usually that 3 month mark right out of a ramp.
Interesting. I think that's a really cool process. It binds everyone back to a cohesive, like, home base, right? I'm curious, when it comes to leadership and accountability for SDRs, team leads alike, what kinds of metrics are meaningful for you when you dig into the numbers sides of things?
Yeah, probably one of the biggest ones is, do you know how many activities it takes you to get a meeting? So like, what's your call to connect rate? What's your connect to book meeting rate? And then we benchmark that with the rest of the team. So everybody, like if you ask any SDR on the team, like how many calls does it take you to get a meeting? They should know their number and they should know their answer. And then in one-on-ones, like you're working on how can I decrease that number? How can I be more efficient? So that's probably the most important thing. And then their conversion rate from meeting booked to meeting qualified is also really important. And then we like to look at it beyond that too. Like I want SDRs to be bought into what their conversion rate is from qualified opportunity to a closed win deal. They need to like know that number as well. They need to be bought into that. If I'm reporting those numbers to the VP, the SDR should know those numbers on an individual level as well, especially if they want to be AEs. So it's usually those three metrics are the big things that I'm looking at.
And when you're watching an SDR over their evolution, especially out of the 3 month period, if they start to see their ratios rise, right, where it's taking them more activities to book meetings and not less, not moving in the right direction, how are you going in and effectively adjudicating or coaching or otherwise in course correcting that behavior?
Yeah, I like to ask them, like, what is their hypothesis and why that is first, and kind of get, again, it goes to like getting them bought in. But usually it's a few things. Honestly, if it's taking you more calls, more activities to get a meeting, it's usually that your data is off. Like the contacts or accounts you're bringing in might not be good. Sometimes we see like SDRs fail to consistently add new accounts to their cadences. So they're calling old stuff. Like if you don't add contacts to your cadence today, it's going to affect you 2 weeks from now, right? So like that's a big thing, is we train them daily, weekly, always be adding new accounts and contacts to cadence. Because what we found is that if they fail to do that, they're calling stuff they've already called a lot of times and emailed a lot of times. And when you have fresh stuff in cadence, it's going to help improve those metrics. So The number one reason, to answer your question, is typically the data. You have old accounts, you're not adding new stuff, or you're just, maybe you rushed the lists that you uploaded from Zoom Info into your Cadence. I mean, if it's not that, then it could be the messaging as well. And so that's usually when we're doing a lot more call coaching. That's honestly less often than it is the data in my experience though.
Yeah. And you know, the whole SDR to AE path, something that you said a little while ago is, you know, especially if you want to be an AE, these are important things to focus on. What, because I know like when you start as an SDR, there's typically a two-pronged path forward. You can obviously do more, but you know, either SDR to AE or SDR to leadership, right? So what do you think some of the differentiating skill sets are between becoming an SDR leader or a sales leader or a closer?
Yeah. Ooh, I like that question. I feel like you can usually tell, like one of the big things is, are you like really team oriented? Like, do you follow the process? Are you sticking within rules of engagement? Is your camera on? Are you engaged? Are you punctual? You know, do you come to one-on-ones like, hey, these are the things I want to focus on? Like, those are the things that kind of indicate to me that they're probably a leader. Like, if you want to be a leader, you have to do all the basic fundamentals. You have to show up for meetings on time. You know, you have to be, because if you're showing up to meetings late, your camera's not on and the rest of the team's going to follow suit. So like, those are big things. On the opposite side, like the AE path, typically those are people who, in my experience, people who kind of hit their number and they're maybe not as vocal or whatnot. They're a little bit more siloed off and they like to just do their thing. I don't know. That's been my experience. But with the leadership path, it's people that are, like I said, do all the basic fundamentals really well.
I'm curious about PandaDoc. By the way, we're a customer of PandaDoc. Yeah. Clients, we love it. But I'm fascinated by your own ideal customer profile, because in my mind, from the outside looking in, it seems fantastically large. It's like anyone that deals
with blessing and a curse.
Signature, e-signature, which is maybe every business on the face of the planet, right? Like,
yep.
So what kind of insights and on the journey of where you start a conversation with your prospects? I'm curious what you've learned and even some of the organic learnings now that, you know, you've been ultimately in what, four different roles here with PandaDoc thus far. And, you know, kind of, again, like you said, started on the front lines as an SDR yourself and moved now into management of the whole entire process.
So it's like it's a good and a bad thing, right? Like we can pretty much talk to anybody. So it's like, where do you spend your time? And like I'll tell you where we have it now, which is where we have SDRs specializing on specific verticals, which in my opinion, I think is the best way to do it, because they're used to speaking that language all day. They know the personas and the social proof to reference. And so I think that works best when you align SDRs to specific, you know, verticals. We actually, like 2 years ago when the Outbound SDR team kind of first started and I joined the team, we were pretty much just focused on software companies. And part of what helped me be successful and scale the Outbound team is trying to find new verticals. And the way we did that is, it goes back to what I said earlier, is starting to look at some of the inbound data. If you have access to that, like look in Salesforce and see what people are coming inbound. And I noticed we were getting an increasing number of nonprofits. And so, and this was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. So at that time, what I started to do as an SDR was I would find whatever state that nonprofit was in, and then I'd pull a bunch of nonprofits in the surrounding location and just call them and say, hey, we're working with so-and-so to help them with these signatures. And then me and my AE started going state by state by state. And then again, it goes back to what I said earlier. I had a close communication with my AE. So he was telling me all the new things he was learning about the nonprofit industry from his demo calls. And then I would just use that to improve my messaging. And it was just a feedback loop. The messaging got tighter and tighter to the nonprofit industry. And we exploded it. And now it's a thing that SDRs are doing. And then we kind of took that same approach with healthcare, to an extent construction, with education, and some of these industries where 2 years ago they weren't really our ICP, but now we're bringing in lots of deals from these new industries.
And was it really that kind of peer-driven messaging where you were starting with the folks that either came inbound or that you had worked as an SDR yourself, learned their stories, learned where they were having success with your solution, and then basically shared it forward to the exact same titles and the exact same industries?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, the exact same titles, exact same industries. My AE would even just straight up be honest and be like, hey, we're like kind of new and I'm just curious. And he would ask for like feedback, like, hey, what sort of documents, because we, you know, e-signature, what sort of documents do you guys work with? And he would ask for information from them on the industry and we would get that information. I mean, the most valuable information for your messaging is going to come from your customers. So it was just completely, we kind of got scrappy with it, and that's how we figured it out.
I mean, I got to say, that's like true A player behavior. That's innovative thinking at its best. That's awesome. Really speaks to how consultative I think sales needs to be to actually work. So that's really cool. And, you know, curious while we're on the topic, like what, so you guys must have an overwhelming amount of inbound leads, having such a huge TAM, you know, and so many folks who, you know, could benefit from your services. So do you coach and hire, for that matter, inbound reps differently than outbound reps?
So I guess I don't really, I mainly just oversee the outbound team. I do have a few inbound SDRs, so I'm not as experienced when it comes to inbound. I will say that I think I can speak to the different skill sets that we look for. We're typically looking for people who are a little bit more product oriented or customer service oriented when it comes to inbound. And then, like I said earlier, that kind of hungry, get after it mindset for outbound. However, I don't coach inbound nearly as much, so I couldn't speak to too much on that end, but on a high level, that's usually what I'm looking for.
Well, and it's a different scenario, different situation. So that makes your ability to go and poke your nose into inbound and see what that deal flow or lead flow looks like and learn from it all the more valuable, because, you know, the way I'm reading that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like, hey, this was an insight born of, well, what's going on over there? Let me see what can I learn?
Yeah. Like one of the most, like, something we did recently in the last like several months was we combined like the inbound and the outbound SDRs were completely siloed off. And we decided to combine some of the weekly meetings together. Like we have team morning meetings and we combined some of them and just let them talk. Like inbound would say, here's what I'm hearing. And then outbound would say, here's how I'm handling these objections. And there's just so much to learn from each other. And I think inbound and outbound communicating is something we, you know, and I as a leader kind of failed to have put in place for a little while. But once we kind of set that in place, it made huge improvements.
And what have you seen thus far with those teams coming together? What are some of the themes that have started to emerge?
So one of the big themes we have, if you think e-signature, there's a big competitor in the space. I won't say their name, but you can probably, I'm sure you probably know who I'm talking about.
And anonymous with the space, but sure. Yeah.
Right. And our inbound SDRs hear their name every day. And there's a lot of people that are coming inbound from this unnamed competitor, and there's specific things that they'll come to them from, like, hey, these are the issues we're dealing with. And so we're not necessarily privy to those issues because we're going outbound. We're not always talking to people they're not coming to us, obviously. So when the inbound SDRs started speaking with those outbound SDRs, they would say like, hey, this is why people from this competitor are coming to us, and these are the pain points they're having, so that we could, you know, reverse it and say, hey, we're talking to people who are experiencing these pain points. And that was a big thing, just kind of hearing why are people from certain competitors coming to us? And then we just go find people that we know have those competitors and target them with that messaging.
That's like perfect for battle card creation. Like if you hear an objection of, oh, we're using something sign.
We don't do free promotion.
Right into that talk track, and it's way more effective, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll put the information that we learned during like a team call onto a Google Doc, share it with everybody, and it's super valuable information.
And how does that feedback loop, how do you guys loop marketing into that? Because that's a really great inbound outbound feedback loop. And I'm curious, like, you know, what does your ideal relationship look like with a marketing team, and how do you loop them into that feedback loop of what you're hearing on the front lines?
Yeah, well, so in the early days, we didn't have a marketing team that was helping me say like, hey, we're seeing a lot of nonprofits come inbound, you should go after them. So now we're at a point where we do have that. And like, for example, now they're telling us, hey, we're seeing a lot of inbounds from manufacturing. So it's weekly meetings and Slack channels dedicated to these new projects. So like we have a manufacturing Slack channel and a manufacturing weekly meeting, and inbound saying, hey, there's lots of people coming from manufacturing. This is what we think the use case is. We give that information to the SDRs. And then we say, hey, SDRs, like we try to empower them and say, hey, this is a new experiment. This is like, you could take this and make it your own. You could be the person that figures out manufacturing for PandaDoc, but you have to keep communicating like in a Slack channel, in the meetings. No, actually, this isn't the case marketing. This is what we're hearing instead. And so we have to make sure that the SDRs feel empowered to give that feedback to marketing. I guess that's kind of how it works. You know, it's just making sure there's a constant feedback loop there.
That's so smart. So smart. It sounds like a lot of these, I don't even want to degrade them by using the word hack, but it sounds like they're really smart hacks that you guys have learned along the way that just make you that much more effective. Is that a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah, I would say so.
So I know you're also, you know, an advisor to Dooley. You've definitely contributed to a number of blogs. You're super active on LinkedIn, part of Rev Genius, and I guess also you've been part of various prospecting masterminds. I'm curious what kind of like, how you view your own level up in being part and sharing a lot of this thought leadership and knowledge, first half of the question. And then second half of the question would be around how are you paying it forward in those communities, in your opinion?
Yeah. So the content and the writing and all that stuff, I guess in the beginning it was like learning out loud, right? So I was like just trying to share the things I was learning out loud. And I think the biggest thing is not coming across like you're the expert, but saying, hey, here are the things I'm learning. They might work for you. But it helped with two things. It helped kind of grow my personal brand, and then it also helped me retain information much better. And so I just started doing that. And then like a following began to build up. I had a newsletter when I first started at PandaDoc. It was like my parents and my family members subscribed. And now we have like 5,000 subscribers. And it all just came from like not positioning myself as an expert, but saying like, these are the actual emails I'm sending. These are the actual call scripts I'm using. This is what's working. This is what's not. And just kind of like showing the scrappy details to people. Like people love actionable things that they can kind of sink their teeth into, not like high level stuff. And so I realized like that's what the SDR and AE community wanted in like the SaaS space. And so I just kept producing that. It's less pressure on me. And if you're like a salesperson listening to this who wants great content, don't put the pressure on yourself of like being an expert. Put the pressure, like just share what you're learning, and there's no pressure because you're not trying to sound like an expert. So that helped me level up for those reasons. Like my brand grew, I started getting better connections with people, and helped me retain information better. I guess to answer your follow-up question, like how I'm paying that forward. Yeah, I had a prospecting mastermind, which is where we would just all get together and just discuss problems. It was like round table, and we would all just brainstorm problems we were running into. You know, I try to meet with other SDRs in the space for like Zoom calls to help them out if I can. The newsletter is a big thing. Not as active in Rev Genius as I would like to necessarily, but those are the main things that I'm, you know, doing to pay it forward. And
yeah. And for our listeners who don't know what an advisor position is or what that means, can you speak to that particular experience that you have?
Yeah, with Dooley, it's different. It's not like a huge commitment by any means. But it is like if you have some type of brand, it's promoting some other things, and in return, like, you know, they're helping you with promotion on their side. So it's kind of like a mutual benefit in promoting brands in that sense. And then it's also like being on the back end and seeing product developments and kind of helping them with some strategy on a high level there. But different advisor roles have different levels of time commitment, and this one's a very low time commitment.
Yeah, we've had some folks from Dooley on the podcast, and it was a great few episodes back for those listening. Want to catch the Ryan Scalera and Ding Zhang.
Oh, they're awesome. Yeah.
They are awesome. Great interview too. So worth the time to listen. So kind of moving forward, given that you're so prolific, given that it, you know, you seem to have gotten a lot of value out of crowdsourcing those scripts and again, just kind of keeping it raw and real rather than saying, hey, I know it all, like help me, like here's what I'm using, what's right, what's wrong with it. Where do you see prospecting? Where do you see the SDR role moving forward?
Yeah, so I'm not one of the people who has like one of these super like, oh, it's all AI, whatever type of like going forward. But I do think, I do see it where when I'm like managing an Oppo SDR team, I realize that now that I'm kind of getting to the point where I see like the business impact in the sense that like deal sizes have to be a certain level for things to be impactful. And I do think like the future of sales development, like it has to be more and more enterprise, and a lot of like the smaller ACV deals are going to be, you know, self-serve or maybe like some of the AI stuff. I'm not super privy with all of it, or, you know, people are talking about product-led growth, but we have to move more and more up market in that sense, just for it to like be a viable strategy. I also think copywriting in general is like something that all SDRs should be spending a lot more time on. And I think in the LinkedIn space, like, yeah, people talk about it and we all like talk about it as a good thing you need to learn to be a successful SDR. But I think it's just going to be more and more important as more and more emails are being sent out, things of that nature. So just have good copywriting skills and be able to communicate, you know, through written word a lot better. And that's the way I see it.
That's fascinating. Having SDRs dive into copywriting skills, you know, cadence structure, that's something that I have a lot of experience with, you know, as an SDR myself, a former SDR myself, I should say, but I'm curious.
Once an SDR.
Once an SDR, always an SDR. Like, honestly, this will stay with you. How do you help coach the call or the email channel? Because it's a totally different skill set than the call channel, although there are some crossovers and similarities. But how do you help reps, level up their email skills or LinkedIn direct message skills?
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard because most people don't want to cold call. So if you tell them like, hey, there's a superpower, you don't have to cold call as much. And I don't by any means want my reps to be like not cold call, but there is that innate fear, like nobody wants to cold call in a sense. So if you say, hey, you can level yourself up and get more meetings and get more out of those cold calls with email, and you have to show them that, like that they can do it. Like that's step one, which is getting them bought in, which usually isn't as hard. It's a good question. I think letting them know that, like helping them find like the way they write and being creative within their emails, like letting them know they can be creative. Like, I don't know, you can put GIFs, I guess, depending on the persona or industry you're selling into, but like you can put like memes and GIFs in your emails. You can get creative with it. Just teaching them little strategies. I think there's like little improvements you can make to your subject line. And when I give them those kind of like little tips and tricks and they see their open rate go up, it keeps the motivation going. It's like, okay, cool. My open rate's going up. Like, let me figure out how can I improve my call to action to increase reply rates. When you get them bought into like the percentages and seeing things go up and up and up, then, you know, they start to get more and more bought in, and you just have to teach them little by little. And I think there's lots of like really actionable tips and advice around email and copywriting that it's easy to give them like a little bit at a time, see improvements, and then just kind of keep coming back for more.
Yeah. And I have kind of a specific question because of, you know, PandaDoc having so many customer use cases, I'm sure. When do you insert a use case, if at all, in a sales cadence, like an outbound sales cadence? And how do you help your reps understand how to talk about past customer success and, you know, how to phrase it so that it's not just like, look at all the things that we've done, and, you know, it's more specifically geared toward them?
Yeah. So the way we structure our cadences is it's like three different clusters, and each cluster is focused around one pain point or use case, right? So like we have persona specific cadences, and then there's three clusters in an email cadence. Each one is focused around one pain point or use case. And so breaking it down even further, the emails that we write, the kind of the structure for all emails in our cadences and the way I coach reps when it comes to copywriting is it should just be three lines. The first line is relevance. Why are you reaching out? What's the reason for the personalization? It's that preview line that's going to entice them to open the email. Line two is the value prop, which is where we insert the use case. And we try to get really good with referencing social proof that they're going to recognize. So even breaking it down to like location, so like industry and location, a very similar customer that you can reference. And that's where we kind of put that use case in and that value prop. And then the third line is the call to action. And the reason why we have three different clusters throughout the cadence focusing on three different pain points is we're hitting them really hard for that like first section of the cadence, talking only about that use case. So case studies, asset types from marketing that we can throw in there, copywriting all about that use case, phone calls, voicemails, LinkedIn. And if they ignore all of that, we're going to assume it's not relevant or that pain point isn't a problem right now. And we'll move on to the next pain point or use case in that cadence. So that's kind of the thought process behind it.
Does that methodology just kind of ride organization-wide, or are you experimenting with other methodologies as well?
That's pretty much the standard outbound methodology for all the verticals we're targeting within our cadences.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and you know, generally it's in our experience too, proven very effective as kind of a model is to really get to social proof, get to what I like to call birds of a feather, where you're talking to people that you don't know and they don't know you yet, and you're talking about their peers and their peers' struggles, problems, goals, hopes, dreams, aspirations, and ways that you've helped them on that journey, which is the most natural way to, you know, kind of familiarize yourself with somebody you don't know.
Yeah, 100%.
So at any rate, this has been a wonderful conversation. And man, we've touched on so many different topics.
It's already 15 minutes. Wow.
It's like time flies when you're deep in the weeds having fun and discussing some of these great learnings. So for our listeners out there who may want to get in touch with you, may even want to, you know, kind of tap your brain and I don't know, perhaps follow you, see some of these writings that you've been sharing. Can you talk about some of your touch points?
Yeah, look me up on LinkedIn, Jed Marley, Marley like Bob Marley, not spelled like that's how it's pronounced. Most people say Marl. And then if you look at my LinkedIn, you'll see like a big bunch of arrows pointing to the featured section where there's like my newsletter, Practical Prospecting, which is where I share pretty much bi-weekly just prospecting advice, tips, real things that I'm doing. So definitely subscribe to that if you're interested.
Yeah, this has been a real pleasure and we've learned a ton. So thank you.
Thank you both.